Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So you might remember we previously had a series on this show bringing you an introduction to various genres of music, giving a little taste of something that maybe you hadn't tried before. So we had a beginner's guide to punk, to classical, to disco and lots more. And today we're starting the beginner's guide to different artists. Maybe David Bowie is an oddity to you, or you're happy enough with or without U2. Maybe there's a blank space instead of Taylor Swift on your playlist. We'll be hearing their lesser known tracks, looking into their early years and generally taking a different look at some of these big artists and bands. And today we're going to start with... Elton Hercules John, born Reginald Kenneth Dwight, playing gigs in Dublin and Belfast this week, and here to tell us all about him is Dave Fang. Good
Claire,
morning.
Good morning to you, Claire.
He was 76 at the weekend. Did you see
that? He was 76 at the weekend. Yeah, I saw that. All right, yeah. And he's been playing this farewell tour now for about 5 years. COVID got in the way, and like Rod Stewart just slags him all the time. Farewell tour for 5 years.
Why not? Can I talk about the Hercules bit first? His middle name, as I said there.
Well, you said Kenneth also, which is Reginald Kenneth Dwight was his name. And he did take on the Hercules, though he didn't take that on until about 72. Mm-hmm. And he was well established by then. I mean, can I say well established? I mean, he did something in the 1960s that I didn't realise until I read his book, Me, which is a brilliant book, by the way, that he had played so many times up and down the M1 and the Transit Van, an old Eric Clapton blues kind of person. And he was with a blues band of his own, actually, called Bluesology, who backed Long John Baldry, who was very much respected at the time. And in fact, that's where he got his name from. Elton Dean, who played sax in the band, and John Baldry himself, Elton John.
I was listening to the audiobook version of that and I actually forgot to finish it, but that's a statement about the book itself. It's just he wasn't narrating all of it, which put me off. You know when somebody else is reading
not?
It?
Oh,
no,
right,
he
see,
does
yeah.
the first bit, does the
oh,
introduction
right, see,
and then
yeah,
someone
yeah.
else takes all over, right. which bugged me a little bit.
That's weird.
But what I did notice about the bit that I did listen to was the hard graft that man put in at the beginning of
his career. Well, if you think of the Beatles starting up to Sgt. Pepper, all of those years, that's five, not two or three years, but 5 or 6 or 7 years he was doing the slog of just, like, they played the Marquee in London 15, 20 times and all that, and he really was out there doing it. But in 67, that year of Sgt. Pepper, there was an ad in the New Musical Express, the NME, says songwriters wanted kind of thing, and just to cut a long story short, he was teamed up with a guy called Bernie Taupin, and the rest is 300 million record sales later.
But there were a lot of people around him who didn't think that he could cut it as the front man.
Well, I mean, I don't blame them, to be blunt. He's not exactly Robert Plant, is he? He's not a rock god. Have you seen him lately, you know? I mean, he never was, but I think he knows that himself. I mean, God, yeah, absolutely.
But if you're, I think, though, that's self-perpetuating, isn't it? If you are the background guy and the brilliant musician, the people don't see you then.
Well,
the
funny thing you say about the brilliant musician, I mean, like, he went to the Royal Academy of Music and it seems like they'd give him a piece of music and he could do it just like that. Mm. He also left before his exams. He left before his exams in school as well. He had a tough time at home in some ways. Father wasn't great. The mother, yeah, whatever kind of thing. You know, she remarried. He got on very well then with the stepfather. But both his parents were very musical. I mean, his father played in bands and stuff.
And tell me a little bit about the stats around him, you know, just how big Elton John is.
Well, I mean, you could just, he's the most successful solo artist, first of all, in the history of the US Billboard charts. 300 million record sales, 50 top 40s. I mean, between 72 and 77, he released about 5 albums. All of them were just massive sellers, all of them number one in America. And there is a statistic, which is a bizarre one, of 1974 direction, which is Goodbye Yellow Brick Road Time, the double album, that Elton John was selling 2.4% sorry, of records sold in America.
All records.
That's just a phenomenal figure. It's insane. You know?
And then recently he's been doing these collaborations, these remix collaborations, including this one. Cold, cold heart. Don't like it. That's Dua Lipa, and then he did one with Britney Spears, which I think is even worse.
Well, you see, the thing is, like, for some reason he gets away with a lot of this. Like, I mean, back in Live Aid, when George Michael was just one half of Wham, mm-hmm. I mean, he did a song, he brought George Michael just out on stage for Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. And, like, he's played piano on an album by Saxon, kind of a fourth division metal band, you know, who asked him, Alice in Chains, these weird bands, Queens of the Stone Age, but the White Stripes, well, not the White Stripes, but Jack White himself. I mean, Axl Rose was the one who inducted him into the Hall of Fame some years back. Eminem, who was like the most homophobic supposedly artist on the planet 20 years ago when he was absolutely huge, he was embraced by Elton. Come on, Bort, you know, it's fine, he's okay, he's all right. Billy Joel, obviously. Ed Sheeran before he became famous. It's
yeah,
a stunning.
So he just Tupac, does these things.
Tupac Shakur was shot dead and his posthumous single goes to number one. Who's all over the posthumous single, Ghetto Gospel? Elton John.
I wonder why. Do we know why he does that?
He does lots of things and they always seem to be successful and he's always welcomed in. He also had an album of duets where he did stuff with Tammy Wynette. Leonard Cohen is on that album as well. Born to Lose, it's called. Nick Kershaw, PM Dawn, Little Richard. He's done duets all the way, right along the way.
Mm-hmm. He just loves music and loves performing because he has not stopped for 50 years?
No, he hasn't stopped. Yeah, he hasn't stopped at all. He really hasn't. And also, he got into musical theatre. I mean, if you think about, like, what he's done with The Lion King, like, it's just astonishing. Can you feel the love tonight in the Circle of Life?
We have
the first
that.
Song is.
We just have a blast of it here because it's huge.
Can you feel the love tonight? It is where we are.
Insane success with that.
Yeah, it wouldn't really be the kind of thing I'd be rushing across the road to see. But anyway, the point about it is that, like, how much money did it make? And let's just measure it by money for a second. Phantom of the Opera was the most famous of all time. This is way surpassed that. It's either 6 or 8 billion that it's made at the box office, which is phenomenal. And then he goes to see a movie, Billy Elliot, which is the movie about the miner's son during the miner's strike.
Yeah.
Who didn't have a mother but had a father who was a miner, and you don't want to grow up to be a dancer. This guy wants to be a dancer. The movie starts off with a T-Rex song, very important for Elton John. He sees the movie and he goes, holy God, that's my story. That is me. I got to do something with this. $800 million later, the musical is still doing well.
So
it's
what did
phenomenal.
He do? He took it from the screen and
he wrote songs,
wrote the music for them.
He wrote with Tim Rice those ones now, not Bernie Taupin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then on the charity side, he's very active and fair. Now, obviously,
huge.
He's a squillionaire, so you know it's easier to give.
Without
if you're
a doubt, he's raised $500 million for charity. There's no question about it. I mean, first of all, his, like, the Vanity Fair party is always the one people talk about at the Oscars. The Elton John party is as big and can make up to 5 and 7 million on that one night in terms of just money given straight to charity.
What does he do? Does he charge them? Does he
oh, yeah, absolutely charge
so
them.
So the stars who go have to pay.
You pay a fortune for the table. Somebody pays a fortune for the table.
Yeah.
But the point also is that, like, he's made a huge amount, about 33 or 4 million for Diana's charity, all for AIDS. I mean, mostly for AIDS. And he's done, like, he's got AIDS charities working in 55 different countries. It's astonishing what he's done, actually.
Yeah, I mean,
he's really put his money where his mouth is.
When you mention Diana, you think back to when she died.
And Versace at the same summer.
Yes.
His two friends.
And the role he played in her funeral and the song and all of that. He became part of the history.
They say the song is
story.
The biggest selling single of all time, but some people would say Bing Crosby's White Christmas is. 33 million sales for the Candle in the Wind remake. Candle in the Wind had been a Marilyn Monroe thing on the, was it the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road album? It was, yeah.
So if you wanted to start finding out more about Elton John through his music, where do you start?
Well, first of all, okay, the music. I'll tell you one thing. People going to the gig tomorrow night or Wednesday night in Dublin are not looking for the new album, that's for sure.
Nobody
by the
ever
way, do
is.
You know what the new album is called, the most recent album? It's called Regimental Sergeant Zippo.
Okay.
From 2021. Nobody could name a song on that album, I'll tell you. But the ones he'll play, I mean, he will do the, like, I mean, I'm Still Standing, he played earlier on. He plays that towards the end of the gig. Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. He'll go off stage and then do his what do you call it, encore stuff. But at Benny and the Jets, he'll start off Philadelphia Freedom, you know, Rocket Man, obviously, Take Me to the Pilot. I mean, what do you want? Like,
it's
he could
great.
Easily do, if he has 25 songs, he could do another gig of 25 hits as well.
Would you and go? Are you going? Would you?
I go now and again to these things. Yeah, I might go see it because I believe the staging is amazing. It's kind of like it's not like a big screen. If they do what they've done elsewhere with this, it's kind of like an infinity pool. It kind of slopes down and seeps into the audience almost. And it's framed by a thing to make it look like a piece of art. So there's bits from his past of John Lennon. But don't forget, John Lennon's last proper gig, Elton John was the one who got it there on stage with him in Madison Square Gardens.
And he has that reputation, or he had anyway, of being very, very difficult and tricky.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. But he kind of, that's when you read the book, you know that. I mean, I don't think he's a particularly warm person, but he's very appealing. In the 1970s, the best of the new journalism writers were writing for Rolling Stone. And they do stuff like, you know, 8 days on the road with Elton John, over 24 pages. It's the most fascinating stuff. A, the writer themselves, but the stuff coming from Elton. I mean, even in his book, he calls Keith Richards a monkey with arthritis, Madonna a fairground stripper. I mean, that's just the beginning. It's just bizarre, the stuff that goes on. And I'll tell you, when you're kind of trying to negotiate the potholes on your bicycle, going to college in sort of a freezing cold Dublin, and you read about Elton John's life, you realise, not sure I want it, but wow, it's fantastic.
Wow, a roller coaster. So just taking a look now at the lesser known Elton John tracks, like so many of them are well known, but there was one album back in the day, Tumbleweed Connection.
Well, funny, Tumbleweed Connection was around the time when singer-songwriters started to become big. Instead of Carole King, say, writing songs for other people, said, I'm going to do my own album. And she sold 30 million copies of Tapestry. Yeah. Everybody was a singer-songwriter. So at that time, I bought Tumbleweed Connection and even another album at the time. No real interest. But I really liked it because of, there was something about, it was a very Southern States of American kind of music. There was a kind of a concept to the whole thing and it just worked.
So it might just be different to what we think of when we think of Elton
John.
Yeah,
because it's like an awful, he started off, remember, playing for a lot of these American bands that came over when he was very, very young. He was backing the Isley Brothers and stuff like that, and Patti LaBelle, etc. But he's soul and blues and country and rock and roll, very soulful, very kind of Ray Charles and Jerry Lee Lewis thing. And when you look at, listen to Tumbleweed Connection, you know, you can see that. I mean, he does the ballads as well, don't, like the song for Guy and Your Song and Daniel and all that, but it's the chords of gospel that you'll find in a lot of these things, and they're really good. It's really very good.
We're just hearing Country Comfort now. That's from that album, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it is very country, isn't
comfort,
it?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's really good. It's just, I don't know how, as he says himself, like, I'm a small gay guy from Pinner in Middlesex and I'm bringing, you know, coals to Newcastle here, because it really was good stuff, Southern States of America.
And it was reviewed really well and people said
and
it was one
so.
Of the best country rock albums
it
of all time.
It absolutely was, yeah. Absolutely beautiful stuff, yeah.
That must have
sickened
the people whose only genre was.
No, he's very much, he lives a lot of the time, I think, in Atlanta and all that. He says, now he doesn't get too patronising, but he says, you know, the people really accept me here and they love me here, and it's true, you know.
So we have to look past the giant sunglasses and the sequin suits. And
well, the giant sunglasses was just a good laugh. I mean, that's what he did. He never needed sunglasses. Or, sorry, he never needed glasses, by the way. He didn't. He just, the ostrich feathers and the 5,000 sort of pound glasses and the kind of Elton written in lights all over the place and the statue. He dressed up as a Statue of Liberty, Donald Duck and Mozart at various concerts. He was completely mad.
Well, he gets the showman side of it.
Look,
you know,
he played on an album called Sweet Deceiver by Kevin Ayers in 1975. That's cool by me.
But you're not a fan.
I'm not major. I mean, I'm a fan of what he is. Like, I mean, it just when you read the interviews or see him being interviewed, he's just so entertaining and he's self-deprecating and all the rest. I mean, he starts off one chapter in his book talking about, did you ever hear that stupid story about this guy who was such a big rock star that he told his road crew, get rid of that wind, I can't sleep, there's a wind outside, get rid of it. It's not apocryphal, it's true. That's me. It's brilliant. There's a lot, but like, I mean, the drug stories are mad. There's a book out, by the way, the one by Tony King called The Tastemaker. And Tony King has been involved with Elton John and Freddie Mercury and everybody else all down through the years. And Tony talks about the day that Elton tried to commit suicide. And I'm sorry, I shouldn't say this, but it's hilarious. He jumps into the swimming pool with his mother there looking for the proper cigarettes that she brought over from England. And he's wearing this dressing gown that's so heavy it weighs him down. And suddenly this was not a joke. And it was a joke. It was just bizarre.
But he's through all of that now, is he? I mean,
oh, yeah,
he's healthy,
been sober for over 30
happy.
Years.
Well,
yeah.
He mightn't
and he
be
really
happy, but he's
did
healthy.
15 years of very crazy drug stuff. Yeah, I mean, mad.
Doesn't he say himself he's still a bit grumpy, even though he's through
but
all
he
of that?
But he is grumpy. I mean, like, he allowed David Furnish, his husband, many years ago, to make a documentary on television called Tantrums and Tiaras, which we suddenly saw what a loony Elton was, but a lovable old rogue.
We're out
loony.
Now. We didn't get time to play your favourite song, which is Don't Go Breaking My Heart.
No, it's
I know
not.
I was going to
no.
Set,
Tiny
set you
Dancer
on
would be my favourite, and he does play that during the gig too.
All right, Dave, thanks so much. Dave Fanning there on Elton
thanks,
John. And enjoy if you're going to see him during the week. Thanks for listening this morning. The programme was produced by Niamh Lyons. Ciarán Donn was our researcher. Jarlath Holland was our broadcast coordinator. And Harry Buckless was on sound. It's over to Louise.